Welcome on into Studio 2 on a Thursday. I'm Cherry Gregg.
On a Thursday, I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. Today on the show, Cherry, we're talking about food labels. You know, you go to the supermarket.
Yep.
You pick up a box of cookies or crackers, you flip it over to the back, and there's all that sort of hard to understand junk about the ingredients and the percentage of fiber.
Like, wow.
Right. Trans fats. What is it? We don't know. Well, the FDA is thinking about adding new labels to ultra-processed food on the front of the box or the bag. And it might say something very simple like high fat, or could have like a stop sign implying that maybe you shouldn't eat this. Would a change in labeling result in a change in American diets? Because we know these ultra-processed foods are linked to all sorts of bad health outcomes. So here's our question for you today. We're going to get into this hour. Would health warnings on the front of food packages make you think twice before buying? Should the FDA put health warnings on the front of ultra-processed food? Give us a call, 888-477-9499, or email studio2@whyy.org.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this show because when I was doing the research, Avi, I got a little nervous. I was like, oh my goodness.
You were nervous.
Yeah, I was nervous because you don't think about how much processed food is just incorporated into your diet, and you just eat these things mindlessly without necessarily reading the stuff on the back of the box. So hopefully this will put this idea front and center. We have a whole trio of guests coming on later, including Senator Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, we're actually going to talk with Senator Bernie Sanders momentarily. Before we get into all of that, and I should say, we're talking to him because he has been at the forefront of this.
Absolutely. He's an advocate
within the legislature. So before we get into all that, though, I want to note that because it's Thursday, we're going to keep our tradition of picking a Studio 2 DJ of the day. And this, the way this works is that we always end the show with some sort of song that is linked to the theme of the show. For instance, if it was a show about work, we might play Dolly Parton's 9 to 5.
Exactly.
Exactly. If you weren't familiar with that song, you just got a nice glimpse at it. Thank you, Cherry.
Yes.
And so we want you to be Studio 2's DJ today. Send a song suggestion to studio2@whyy.org. That's studio2@whyy.org. Send that song suggestion no later than 12:30. We're going to pick one winner and shout you out at the end of the show and play your song. So today's show, you know, it could be a song about food or junk food or snacks. Warnings, labels.
Yeah.
Just go wherever you want to go with it. And then producer Paige will pick her favorite.
I love it. I love it. Can't wait to see what you guys come up with. And so now we're going to do our news stories for today.
Hit me.
Tawny Street, which some folks call Taney Street, will soon be renamed after Caroline LeCount. She was a civil rights activist, also known as Philly's Rosa Parks. Yes, I love this story. If you don't know where Taney Street is, it runs through South Philly, Fairmount, and North Philly. And it's currently named after former Supreme Court Justice Roger Taney, who wrote the 1857 Dred Scott opinion, in which he said that Black people, quote, had no rights which the white man was bound to respect. Now, mind you, this was a time when slavery was still going on in America, and the Supreme Court had said that enslaved people were not U.S. citizens and were not protected by the U.S. Constitution. Now, around the same time, Carolyn LeCount, Avi, a Philly native, was a fierce civil rights advocate. She was fighting for streetcar segregation in the 1860s. She was a school principal.
Fighting against it, to be clear.
Yeah, fighting against streetcar segregation, or should I say working to desegregate streetcars. She was the first Black woman to pass the city's teaching exam, and folks have been working for years to rename Taney Street after Caroline LeCount. And the renamed Taney Coalition got 3,000 signatures to accomplish this.
And so it looks like it's going to happen.
Yeah.
That's the upshot, right? Taney Street, gone. And I guess it'll be called LeCount Street.
Yes.
Which sounds, it rolls right off the tongue. I like it. This shocked me. According to the city, this will be the first time a Philadelphia street will be named after a Black woman.
That is
In the
that
city
is amazing.
Of Philadelphia.
That is amazing.
Stunning. And it made me realize that when they do the changes, they often do like a block. And mm-hmm. they won't change the street name, but they'll say like, this block is in honor of so-and-so. They rarely change street names. So this is a big change. And people have been fighting for this for a long time. Roger Taney, by the way, no real connection to Philadelphia.
No.
So even on that level, it makes sense to change it. So it looks like this is going to happen. Something that happened yesterday in the political realm, Vice President Kamala Harris was in Bucks County hoping to persuade Republican voters to vote for her. She chose a historical backdrop. We're just talking about history there. Washington Crossing in Bucks County. It's called Washington Crossing because that's where Washington crossed the Delaware. So this was an event really targeted toward, you know, Republican-leaning independents, Republican voters who might have some misgivings about Donald Trump, specifically around January 6th, perhaps even the overturning of Roe v. Wade, things that have happened since the last presidential election. She was there with some big-name Republicans, including Christine Todd Whitman, Adam Kinzinger. And, you know, she was preaching unity, and she was trying to reach out to those suburban voters who we believe will be key to her coalition in November.
Yeah, and Avi, you and I went to Bucks County last week. We spoke to voters, and that county is purple, has had more Democrats than Republicans in 2020, but that has since shifted for 2024. And speaking of, and every vote will make a difference in that county. And speaking of difference makers, suburban voters in collar counties, Avi, surrounding Philadelphia are vitally important to the election. So we are continuing our Studio 2 on the Road series.
We need music for that.
Yeah, next week. We do see some music.
On the road again.
I know. And it's titled The Role of the Philadelphia Suburbs in the 2024 Election. And we're so close to Election Day that we're going to be at the Upper Dublin Library to shine the light on these suburban voters. And we've talked about this. The Commonwealth helped former President Trump win in 2016 and then helped President Biden win in 2020. So we're going to be looking at this. This voting block, this critical voting block, will be asking, will the burbs hold for Harris or turn the state red? And you can register for this free event in Upper Dublin on Monday, October 21st at 6 p.m. by going to whyy.org/events.
And can I shout out Katie Meyer?
Former WHYY political reporter. Yeah.
Studio 2 guest. She's going to be one of our panelists. Again, it's October 21st, Monday. That's the next Monday coming up, folks. 6 to 7:30, Upper Dublin Library, whyy.org/events is where you go to register. And let me give you some data about Bucks County real quick. President Biden carried that county by 4 points in 2020. I think the bet that Kamala Harris is making is that she can push that margin even higher. And there's some proof that that could work. Because in 2022, in the governor's race, Governor Josh Shapiro carried Bucks County by 20 points.
Wow. Yeah.
So, look, we don't, those are very different elections, off year election versus presidential. I don't think anyone, even the most optimistic person in Kamala Harris's camp, is thinking they can carry Bucks County by 20 points. But improving upon 4 seems possible. It looks like there's some wiggle room there, and she may need to improve in order to keep the coalition together, because yesterday we talked about some slippage with other traditional Democratic constituencies. So I think that's what we want to talk about on Monday. We want to hear from you. And perhaps you are an undecided voter, or you've got neighbors, right, who are also undecided, who might be, you know, we want to hear what the types of conversations you're having with them.
Yeah. So go to whyy.org/events. Make sure you register. I want to take a moment, though, and send my deepest condolences to the family of Ruth Wilson. I don't know if you remember a story I did in April, Avi. I don't know. This is kind of sad. I interviewed Miss Ruth. She was a Rosie the Riveter. She went from working as a domestic to becoming a sheet metal specialist during World War II, and was one of the hundreds of thousands of Black women whose lives were changed forever by the war. They left sharecropping fields, Avi, and domestic jobs, earning higher wages for their families. And I met Miss Ruth years ago and then interviewed her again in the spring. She was 102 at the time, joyful, funny, sharp as a tack, but she died a week ago. And you know, life well lived, though. And she survived by her 2 daughters, her grandchildren, and a host of family and friends. So rest in peace, Miss Ruth Wilson. And now we are moving on to our main topic, food labels. We've all seen the dietary information on the back of our chip bags and cookie boxes, but do we actually read it? For years, advocates have argued that our labeling system just doesn't give shoppers the information that they really need to make healthy choices. And the FDA seems to be listening. The Food and Drug Administration will soon propose adding warning labels to the front of food packages to highlight their nutritional content or the lack thereof.
But the food and beverage industries are pushing back. They argue labels won't change shopper habits, and they question the FDA's authority to require health warnings. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders has been leading the charge for front-of-package food labels. He chairs the Senate Committee on Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions. And just this morning, Senator Sanders announced hearings in December about the FDA's food label proposal and design. Senator Sanders joins us now on Studio 2. Welcome.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you for paying attention to this really important issue.
Yeah, and to you, our listeners, our question to you is, would health warnings on food packages make you think twice about buying them? And should the FDA put health warnings on the front of ultra-processed food? You can call us 888-477-9499 or email studio2@whyy.org.
And Senator Sanders, for our first question, I just want to channel the skeptic here who might say, look, when I pick up a bag of Doritos or Cheetos, I know it's not healthy for me. I don't need a label from the government telling me that. Why do you think labels would help?
Good labels will help. The labels that we have now are fairly ineffective. I'm looking at a label right now on a bottle of soda, and this is what it says. It says that there are total carbohydrates in a 12-ounce serving of 33 grams. What does that mean to you?
To me personally, it means very little.
Yeah.
It means anything. It turns out that, you know, that would be about 8 teaspoons. Might be a little bit more understandable for the average person. Second of all, you know, I don't think most parents understand that kids who are drinking, you know, soda, sweetened soda, stand a much greater chance of being overweight. And when you're overweight, you stand a much greater chance of coming down with diabetes. So what we are looking at right now, and the reason we are trying to act aggressively here, is that we're looking at an epidemic in this country of kids who are overweight and an epidemic of childhood diabetes. So we're looking at 1 out of every 5 kids in America today is overweight, and 35 million Americans are struggling with type 2 diabetes. And these numbers have soared in the last number of decades. And if you're not even concerned about the health impact of the kind of processed foods and the sweet foods that we're eating, you should worry about the amount of money that we're spending. In 2023, we spent on our healthcare system $413 billion dealing with diabetes. And that's up 27% over the past 6 years. It's going to go up, continue to go up. Thus, we got a handle on it.
Yeah. What exactly are you asking the FDA to do, and what has been their response thus far?
Well, we're going to have Dr. Califf, who's the chairman of the FDA, come before us on December 5th before our committee. What we're asking is a couple of things, and they're not really radical. There are a number of countries that are already doing this. We want a ban on junk food advertising targeted to children. So if you are, you know, a kid or a teenager watching television, you get bombarded with all kinds of ads telling you, you know, buy this, buy that. Your parents, you know, a parent takes the kid into the grocery store. Oh, mom, oh, dad, please, you got to buy me this stuff. A number of countries around the world, including Ireland, Portugal, South Korea, Spain, Taiwan, have either banned junk food ads or seriously restricted them. So I think we've got to do that. Do we really want our kids being bombarded with ads that will cause them to be overweight, increase the likelihood of diabetes and sickness and great expense to our healthcare system? I think not. That's number one. Number two, we want strong labeling that people understand. Kind of the labeling that it's not only front of package labeling, it's labeling that you understand. What does it mean if I drink a 20-ounce bottle of Coke? Really, what does it mean to my health? Now, a number of years ago, obviously, the Congress, with great courage, took on the tobacco industry. I can remember as a kid. The older listeners will remember having doctors on television in their white coats saying, I'm smoking this cigarette. It is cool. It's a really wonderful cigarette. The industry lied through its teeth, and people died by the millions as a result of that. And the industry, this case, you know, the food and beverage industry is lying right now. So we want strong labeling that people can understand on the front of labels. We want a study by the National Institute of Health to take a look at what ultra-processed foods are doing to this country. And we want a campaign to go out there, as we have done in the past, with tobacco, with opioids and so forth, to educate people about the dangers of processed foods.
Can I ask you about taxing as well? Because one thing that happened with cigarettes is that states universally decided to tax cigarettes. It's very expensive to have a smoking habit now. On the reverse, it is very cheap to buy ultra-processed foods. And in fact, in many neighborhoods, they're the cheapest thing available. Should we tax ultra-processed foods?
Well, you have raised a very important question. And that is, and I've been around the country, and I've gone to low-income communities where, A, there are often no decent grocery stores where people have an option to buy good quality food. And second of all, in America, if the good quality food is available, it is often very expensive and out of the reach of low-income people. So I think, you know, what we have to do is work to make sure, and this is a big deal. I mean, we talk about making prescription drugs available. Well, good quality food is a health issue as well. We got to work hard on that.
Yeah.
But do you think taxing should be on the table or some sort of way to change the structural imbalance where healthy food is, like you said, can be
more expensive? The answer is yes, but I always get nervous, you know, that some of my colleagues in Congress are always quick to want to tax low-income people but not tax the billionaires. So if you're going to be talking about, you're right. I mean, a pack of cigarettes today is very expensive. Is it a disincentive to smoking? It is.
Yep.
But on the other hand, I want to make sure that that money goes in a proper way, which makes it easier for people to buy the good quality food they need. Which
and the flip could be you could subsidize healthier food and not do sort of that penalized approach.
If that's
as you
where the money goes, I think that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And Senator Sanders, I want to talk about the political will and bipartisan support. Is it there to get this type of legislation accomplished?
Is it fair?
Is it there? I mean, the bipartisan support,
well,
and the political will, is it there?
Look, I don't think it's a great secret to your listeners to understand that our both our economy and our political system are dominated by billionaires and very wealthy and powerful special interests. The food and beverage industry will be spending all kinds of money fighting us. They will be being disingenuous about the kind of studies that are out there. And they want to continue making money by giving our kids unhealthy products. That is the sad reality of where we are today as a nation. But I think there are Republicans, Democrats, progressives, independents, I'm an independent, who understand that no matter how you look at it, we cannot continue to be a nation where we have so many folks who are suffering because of obesity, and where we are dealing with a diabetes epidemic. So if you're asking me, do I think there is political will? Yes, but we're going to be having to take on some very, very powerful special interests who could care less about the children of this country. They worry about their profits.
Just a minute left, Senator, but I want to ask you also about something that really did hamstring the tobacco industry, and that's lawsuits, consumer lawsuits. Mm-hmm. Now, I know that's not necessarily a lever that you can pull, but do you foresee lawsuits that could hold these large companies accountable for perhaps misleading the American public about the health effects of their product? Do you think that's going to be part of the solution here?
I mean, I think it may be. If, you know, and there's so many tragedies that, you know, I have heard about as chairman of the committee, you know, where people who are overweight were not and died from, you know, heart disease or whatever it may be, were not aware, were not made aware of what the food that they were eating, the kind of health impact it had on them. And very often, you know, the industry will lie. So, you know, we saw massive lawsuits against the tobacco industry, against the opioid manufacturers who was, you know, widely distributing their product that was hooking people and making them addicted. So, yeah, I would not be surprised if that is one of the developments out of this whole process.
Well, thank you so much, Senator Bernie Sanders, for speaking with us today on Studio 2. We appreciate you.
Well, thank you again very much for your interest in this important issue.
Yeah. So we're going to be right back. We're going to take a break and talk more after the break about food labels. Would you buy less junk food if there were warning labels on it? You can call us right now, 888-477-9499, or email studio2@whyy.org. We'll take some callers after the break. We have a couple of guests, experts on this, and we will be right back.
Yeah, the Candyman can. The Candyman can, 'cause he mixes it with love.
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's tight.
Between now and Election Day,
we are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.
Okay. Hot Cheetos and Takis. Hot Cheetos and Takis. I can't get enough of these Hot Cheetos and Takis. Got my fingers stained red and I cannot get them off me. You can catch me in my...
All right. This is Studio 2 from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Avi Wolf-Manarin.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. We set the scene there because we're talking about food health labels. The FDA will soon come out with a proposal for a universal front-of-package health warning label. It's going to mess up our hot Cheetos and Takis
it
there.
It will. It will. But I do love Cheetos. I do. I have to confess.
Yeah. Yeah. But the question is, would a big warning sign slapped on the front of a bag of hot Cheetos or chips or candy bar or a bottle of soda really stop you from buying it? Is this an effective way to tackle diet-related diseases like obesity and diabetes? We have two guests joining us to talk about the FDA proposal and if warning labels really work. We have Christina Roberto, Associate Professor of Health Policy and Director of the Psychology of Eating and Consumer Health Lab at the University of Pennsylvania in Studio. Christina, welcome to Studio 2.
Hi, thanks for having me.
We also have Lauren Weber, the health accountability reporter for the Washington Post on the line. Lauren, welcome to Studio 2.
Thanks for having me.
And our question for you at home today, would health warnings on food packages make you think twice about buying? Should the FDA put health warnings on the front of ultra-processed food? Email us, studio2@whyy.org, or give us a call, 888-477-9499.
And we're going to bring in a caller. We have Jen from Ambler who wants to talk about food labels. Jen, thanks for holding on. You're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
My comment is it's long overdue. As we look at the obesity rates in our country soar and the diabetic rates soar, just like Bernie Sanders said, we have limited ads for cigarettes and we have warnings on cigarettes. Why are we not treating this same epidemic with the same lens? Why are we shoving this stuff at our kids when we know it's making them sick?
Yeah.
And I know for my teenagers, if they saw that, they would stop and think about whether or not they really wanted to eat it. But the information that we give them, that we give people right now, is really difficult to parse through. Again,
yeah,
like Bernie Sanders said.
Thank you, Jen.
You really have to dig. And I think we're doing us a disservice.
Thank you so much. That was Jen.
That's a strong
from
start.
Ambler. That's a strong kickoff to the conversation.
Sure is.
And so, Christina, we wanted to sort of lay the groundwork and just really explain to us what, when we talk about ultra-processed foods, what are we talking about? What's the process that they've been through? And give us some examples.
Sure. So ultra-processed foods, these are foods that you're not going to be able to make with ingredients you have in your kitchen, right?
Hmm.
Like, they're really weird names and dyes and colors and xanthan gum and things I can't even pronounce, right? And so they've been through a lot of processing, and we're at the point now where a lot of these foods, because of that processing, because of the salt, sugar, and fat in them, they're addictive, right?
Mm.
Like, I cannot have Oreos in my house. I will overconsume them.
You will eat them, yes.
Yes, right? And so they're everywhere. They're really hard to avoid. And John's right. They're making us sick.
And I think that's something that I would love to have you distinguish, because there's plenty of quote-unquote natural foods that have fat in them. We were talking about walnuts off air. They have fat in them. Certainly types of meat have plenty of fat in them. Is that fat hitting your body differently than fats or salts in ultra-processed food? Is it just that we can eat more of the latter? I mean, what is the substantial difference between these two things?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So let's take like brownies you might make in your own kitchen versus mm-hmm. brownies you might buy at the store. On the one hand, the brownies that you make are going to have salt, sugar, and the unhealthy fats, and you're probably going to eat a lot of them. At the same time, like, let's think about that process. First of all, they're going to go stale after a couple of days, mm-hmm. okay? Mm-hmm. They're not going to have a lot of these other chemicals or additives that are also making us sick in other ways. Mm. They're also not going to be marketed to you, right? You're not going to have these, like, pre-existing associations with them that make them so compelling. Whereas the brownies that you buy at the store, like, they're going to last. They might last a month, many yeah. months, mm-hmm. right?
It is amazing how
bread
long
never
can
goes. Yeah, right. Never mold. Yeah.
It's a little scary, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. And then they're going to have these other kinds of additives and things that we're learning more and more about are not healthy for us, are also making us sick.
Yeah. And I wanted to ask you about this whole idea of why we can't put it down, the addictive nature of these foods. What makes them so addictive such that, you know, while we're eating them, we don't even realize that we've probably overeaten?
Right. So the food industry has invested, obviously, a lot of time and a lot of money to engineer foods in ways that are perfectly crafted to what we love, right? Things like bliss points. There's so much science behind exactly the taste profile, right, of a Cheeto, right? And the texture and the color and the way it's been marketed your whole life, ever since you were a kid. And so all those things come together in ways that have been carefully engineered so that we cannot stop eating them.
Lauren Weber from The Washington Post, can I ask you to give us a little history here? Because we have labels on our food mm-hmm. right now. We mm-hmm. have nutritional facts on the back. How did we end up where we are now? When were those changes put into place? And what's on the table right now for the FDA?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I think it's important, Senator Sanders said this, but I mean, this comes in the context of nearly 1 in 5 children in the United States is obese. Mm. So this is just kind of, you know, the table setter, here's where we're at. So the FDA has been looking at proposing some form of labels that would go on the front of foods. But what's interesting is the FDA proposals are not nearly as strong, Sanders and other nutrition experts say, as a lot of the warning labels you see in countries all over the world, such as in Chile and Mexico. In Chile, they slap these stop sign shaped, they're like black octagonal shaped warning labels that say something's high in calories, high in sodium, high in saturated fat, high in sugar. But the FDA, due to the First Amendment protections that are offered to companies here in the United States, has taken a slightly different tact and is weighing proposing labels that Sanders and nutrition folks don't think are clear enough that say on them, this something is high in sodium or it's high in this, or there's a version that could be a stoplight system where it could have a yellow, green, or a red color next to a nutrient.
And why would that be as effective as an octagonal shaped, you know, design? I mean, those sound kind of similar, just to a layperson.
They sound similar. I think what research and what experts have told me is that the octagonal shaped design, which is also what Bernie Sanders is pushing for, is very clear. A child sees a stop sign and they know what it is. In Chile, there's been a fair amount of research that shows that even the children have said to their parents, like, look, I don't want to buy things, or I don't want to bring these things into school because some of the schools have rules against it, that have 3 stop signs. Can we get one with only 1 stop sign? Mm-hmm. It's very effective. I mean, I will say personally, I just went to Mexico a couple months ago and was in the airport. And if you go around and you look at all the fabulous snacks we would all love to buy at the, you know, when you're sitting in the airport killing time, pretty much everything you would like to buy has a ton of octagonal stop signs on it. Mm. And it really does make you stop and think twice. Now, the options that may come to fruition in the U.S., are a little bit less clear, these experts say. They say they're a little bit more confusing. They could be better than nothing, but they may not achieve the point at which they would like to see, is their argument.
Real quick, Christina Roberto, do you agree with that synopsis that red light, yellow light, green light system might not work as effectively as what they have in Chile?
So absolutely agree with Lauren. I think the Chile stop signs are our best bet.
And the research shows that.
Yeah, there's great research now on that symbol. So, for example, we've seen close to a 25% reduction in sales of sugary drinks in Chile after the introduction of that and a couple other policies that went along with it. Now, that being said, what concerns me about the FDA's proposal is the stop signs that they're using right now are a little confusing. So what could happen is you could approach a packaged food item and see, like, soda, for example, might be green for fats and red for sugar. And so it's like pulling up to a traffic light that's red and green at the same time. And then you don't know what to do, right?
Right, so that's confusing.
Right. Now, even with that, we do have a reasonable option from FDA. This high-end label is just saying, hey, this food is high in sugars, it's high in saturated fat, it's letting the consumer know that it's not great for us. The other option they're considering is what the industry does right now on a voluntary basis. It's called Facts Up Front. It's super confusing, right? So it has
percent up front.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right? So it has grams and milligrams. It has percent daily values. There's a lot of numbers. It's very dense. There's no icons. There's no colors. So even among the FDA choices they're considering, I would go with a high-end a million times over this industry standard that the food industry is really pushing for.
Hmm. Yeah. And I want to pose the question of today to our listeners. Join in the conversation. The question is, should the FDA put health warnings on the front of ultra-processed food? And would health warnings on the front of food packages make you think twice about buying them? You can call 888-477-9499 or email studio2@whyy.org. I'm going to read a couple comments and then bring in a caller. Victor comments, my cousin who has kids gave me one and only one piece of parenting advice, milk or water, and that's it. Great advice. That's what Victor says. And Dean comments, as much as I enjoy a crispy, salty or savory snack, I do have to say, as I get older and it gets harder to shed pounds, I am looking more and more at food labels and calorie counts. I want to bring in Ian from Philadelphia, who is an educator for nutritional sciences. Ian, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hi, I just wanted to say that I strongly support putting warning labels on the front of ultra-processed food. I think that would be very effective in helping some people decide what foods are healthy and what foods are not, particularly children, who I think are very vulnerable to things like images and marketing messages. I also do it today. I think that this is just a Band-Aid solution. I think that ultra-processed foods are as cheap as they are, as you were talking to earlier, because we subsidize the crops that make ultra-processed food. And right now, less than 1% of all of the subsidies given out by the farms bill go to the combined category of fruits and vegetables, which is why they're often so expensive. And I think that's a huge problem. So I think this is a great start, but I think we have a lot of work to do that hopefully Mr. Sanders can get on.
Yeah, thank you so much. That was Ian from Philadelphia. And so Ian raises a good point, and he specifically talks about children. And so I want to kind of shift our conversation a bit from the, and hone in on kids. And Lauren, I know you've done quite a bit of research on this and reporting on this. According to the CDC, nearly 20% of children are obese. They have higher rates. How much of this processed food are kids eating? And why is it so dangerous when we talk about the younger members of our society?
So I want to take you back to a story I did last year on Lunchables. I don't know if you all are aware, but Lunchables are now eligible for the federal school lunch program. So they can be served to kids by the government. And a lot of nutrition experts are not really happy about that because they say that Lunchables are an ultra-processed food, a lot of sodium, et cetera. And Lunchables retooled their products so that they were able to serve them under this program last year, calling it a $25 billion marketing opportunity. So let's just talk about what happens for school lunches for kids. You have things like Lunchables, Domino's. You have other items, big ticket name food items where they try and get in your kids' lunchroom because it's a very good marketing opportunity for them to sell things for the future, not only to your child, but so that your child goes home and asks their parent, hey, I had this at school lunch. I'd love to have it more. Can you buy it at the grocery store? And so, you know, what you're seeing is a lot of the influence of these big food companies in every facet of children's lives. You know, Senator Sanders mentioned he'd love to see more bans on advertising for children. The U.S. does not have any sort of restrictions around junk food advertising for children. That is something you do see in other countries. You do not see it here. You also do not see, due to big food influence in the halls of Congress, you don't see as much movement to restrict these things. Sanders is a bit alone on this right now, in part because you have a lot of corporations that donate a lot of money to various members of Congress or have a lot of jobs in their district, which leads to weaker food regulation.
Let me read this comment from She, who says, if the new packaging helps 10% of people have better health outcomes It's worth it. Christina Roberto, let's talk about that number, 10%. And let's talk about the effectiveness of these policies where they exist. I mean, is 10% of people possible? Is that a reachable number? How big are the effects when we try to study this thing in the real world?
Yeah, I love that comment because I think, look, people are different. You pass a policy like food labeling, it's going to impact people differently, mm-hmm. right? But if there's a subset of people that has diabetes or is really trying to lose weight or just wants to keep their kids healthy, right? And it's 10% of the population and they eat healthier, great. It's really hard to change eating habits. It's really hard to, you know, support people in this. So I agree with that 10% number. Now, when we look on average, there are studies that look at sales, supermarket sales after food labels. And we see the effects ranging anywhere from about 4% to all the way up to 23%, 25%.
In terms of a
drop
in sales.
In yeah. sales of yeah. unhealthy foods or unhealthy products, right? But I agree. Like, if we can get a small subset of the population to respond, that's great.
Let me ask you, and this is hearkening back to something you mentioned earlier, how food companies are so good at tweaking the science behind their food to make it appeal to us. If we put limitations in place, wouldn't they find ways to circumvent them or to make it so that, you know, it doesn't quite apply to this stop sign or that stop sign? It's not quite high in sodium. It's really close because they added something else that's also really addictive. Do you worry it could have that type of ripple effect?
I do worry about that. So for example, in Chile, where they have this policy, and in Mexico, one unfortunate consequence is that as they've lowered the sugar in food, we have seen an increase in these non-sugar substitutes, mm-hmm. right? So there's a lot of different sweeteners, whether we're talking about stevia, monk fruit, aspartame. And so we're starting to see increases there. And so I think in this country, we want to get ahead of that and be thinking about, okay, well, do we need to label that? Should we at least have a tracking system in this country to monitor how much is in our food supply?
But then you could have too many yeah. labels and it becomes like label overload, right?
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I totally agree. So on the one hand, labels can incentivize companies to reformulate in ways where they bring down the sodium, but you can have some of these adverse consequences. I think stepping back, probably what we need is just, we do need some better data to actually regulate what companies are able to do in terms of tracking how they're changing the food supply over time and preventing them from adding some of this other unhealthy stuff in.
Yeah, I want to bring in another caller. We have Nick from Northeast Philadelphia here, who is not necessarily in support of labels. Nick, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hello. I'm all for the label on cigarettes, but I'm not so much for this labels on food. Look, it's common knowledge, with or without a label, it's common knowledge that if you eat too much, especially if you eat too many snacks and too many sweet stuff, you could get heavy. Now, you know, this thing of you know, putting labels, I sort of think it's being like a killjoy. You know, you just let the kids have a soda once in a while. Now, if a parent sees his kid is drinking 10 sodas a day, then the parents would say, look, if you want to have one or two sodas, that's okay, but don't eat or drink too much. You know, keep them from drinking anything. It's like being a killjoy.
So thank you so much, Nick. That's Nick from Northeast Philly. And I have some comments.
Overload.
That will talk yeah. about this, because I remember when restaurants, chain restaurants, started adding the calories to the menus. Mm-hmm. And for me, you know, I used to just order my favorite salad with the deep fried cornbread croutons. And then I found out it was 1,700 calories for that salad, and I stopped getting it.
Where was that salad from?
That's from Longhorn.
Longhorn. I'm writing that down. Okay, Longhorn.
It was delicious. Bacon, you know, vinaigrette. It was delicious. But my whole point is that, you know, and I kind of go with what he just said on the phone, like, how much of this is the government's job to do? Shouldn't parents regulate this? If you have all the knowledge, shouldn't it be just on the parents? Shouldn't it just be on me? I mean, it did stop. It took a lot of joy. It took a lot of joy. Christina.
But what I love about that example is you sat down at that restaurant thinking, a salad, that's healthy, yeah, right? Yeah. And then this information became more transparent to you, and you were like, whoa,
those
actually,
deep fried
yeah. the case. And that's true. Like, yeah, actually, we know from data that most people do know soda is bad. I'm mm-hmm. not going to disagree. You know what they don't know is bad? Fruit drinks targeted to kids. Fruit right. drinks mm-hmm. that have pictures of fruits or vegetables on yeah. them and characters. They actually think that's good, and we have data on that, right? So they're giving it to their kids thinking it's healthy, and it actually has as much sugar as soda. Mm. So I think there's just so many products out there that we don't know. And the other thing I would say about labels is a lot of times it's educating us, but sometimes it's also just reminding us. Like, right. hey, you have a health goal. Hey, remember you wanted to limit. You wanted to do one soda instead of 10.
And I have a quick follow-up because I wanted to bring Lauren back in and talk about, and Bernie Sanders talked about this. Avi asked about this. Taxes, because in Philadelphia we had the soda tax, yep. and now you know purchases of sodas like sugary sweetened sodas has gone down. Are there other methods, Lauren? Like, why not just do a ultra, you know, processed food tax?
I mean, I think that's a great question. I think you heard Sanders not give you a straight answer on it, because yeah. that would be mm-hmm. even harder to get through than a food label situation.
But cities could do it, right? Like Philly did the soda tax, yeah.
Cities absolutely could do it. But I mean, as our last caller just exemplified, I don't know how well that would go over. So I think that the government is trying to get across what they feel like is feasible, which is part of the reason why nutrition experts are unhappy with the possible options they're offering. But I mean, to be very clear, they're also operating in a legal environment. I think it's important to note that these companies, the big food companies have said they would be likely to sue. They don't feel like the FDA has the authority to change these labels in this way. They say that it infringes upon their corporate right to commercial free speech. They say it's disparaging in different manners. So there's already a potential legal battle brewing if this proposal does come through.
Wow. I want to go back to something you just said, Christina Roberto, about where this might be most effective. There are a lot of things that seem healthy, that we believe are healthy, that are not healthy. You mentioned one category, but I was wondering if you could expand on that, because I read like some of these labels might apply to even Cheerios. I mean, I genuinely think yeah. Cheerios are healthy. I mean, is there stuff out there that we're kind of all being tricked on?
Yeah, I think there are a lot of products like that, right? So soups, right?
Soups.
They're incredibly high in sodium, but there are some soups that are lower in sodium. A lot of sauces, like you want to buy pasta sauce. Many of them have tons of added sugar, but some don't. Peanut butter, right? Yeah. Some are packed with added sugar, but some products aren't, right? And so these labels help us distinguish within a category.
Because I go to the supermarket and I yeah. see peanut butter and I equate it all.
Yeah.
But you're saying a label could help me distinguish between real bad peanut butter and peanut butter that actually might be pretty darn good for me.
Absolutely.
Hmm.
Yeah. And we only have a couple more minutes in this segment. But, you know, Lauren, there's this hearing in December. What are we expecting from the FDA on this?
Well, I mean, the FDA was supposed to come out with a proposal on this long before now, and they have yet to do so. I think it's also worth noting we are in election season. So even if they do come out with something soon, if the administration were to change, Donald Trump previously did not appear to be a fan of any sort of food labels. His administration fought against their implementation in Mexico during NAFTA trade agreements. That said, his teaming up with Robert F. Kennedy, they have been throwing around some stuff around ultra-processed food. So TBD, I think that we have to kind of see how the election plays out before we have a better sense of the timing on this, realistically.
Wow. Well, look, we'll be following this closely, and we want to thank actually producer Debbie Builder especially for just bringing yeah. this to our attention, because I did not even realize that this was moving forward in Washington, and now that we know, we can all track it a little more closely.
And I also want to say that the shade has been lifted.
The shade
has I will be removing some of these ultra-processed foods, and like you, Christina, more Oreos in the house. Okay.
No more Oreos in the house. Got it. Well, we all learned something today.
I think Christina
Roberto is Associate Professor of Health Policy and the Director of the Psychology of Eating and Consumer Health Lab at the University of Pennsylvania. Christina, thanks so much for coming in today.
Thank you guys for having me.
Also want to thank Lauren Weber, Health Accountability Reporter for The Washington Post. Lauren, thanks for laying it all out.
Thanks for having me.
And this is to feed the mind, mm-hmm. not so much the stomach. We are choosing and revealing our Studio 2 DJ of the Day. And there was one song that was nominated so many times that we simply could not deny it. So our Studio 2 DJ of the Day song is by Weird Al Yankovic.
I love Weird Al.
And the song, you might have already guessed, is based off the Michael Jackson hit Beat It.
Eat It.
Eat It. Eat It, which was nominated by Scott and Robert and Matthew and apparently many more people. So you are all our Studio 2 DJs of the day. Thank you so much for playing our fun, weird little game.
Yes, and that wraps our show for today. Thank you to our producers, Studio 2 producers, Debbie Builder, Paige Murray Bessler, and Andreas Copes. Al Banks engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCrory. Joan Isabella is our Studio 2 general manager from Studio 2 at WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Cherry Gregg. I'm going to be eating it today. Go ahead.
I'm Avi Wolfman, Aaron. No further comment. Thank you for joining us. We will talk to you again next week. Yourself.